The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. If you ever paid attention in Canadian history class, you probably know just how often Canada's federal government butts heads with provincial leadership. Really, you could also just pick up a newspaper or a magazine. But something strange started happening in 2018. It began with some grassroots planning, but eventually consolidated in election after election.
Canadians have known all along that Justin Trudeau's carbon tax was just a tax plan dressed up as an emissions plan.
Saskatchewan and Ontario will continue to be strong allies in the fight against a destructive, made in Ottawa carbon tax that does nothing for our environment.
The carbon tax is the worst possible tax for Canadian economies.
With less than a year to go before Canada's next federal vote, conservatives at both the national and provincial level seem to think that they've got a pretty good stick with which to whack Justin Trudeau and the Liberals. So, do they? The carbon tax was the political issue of 2018, but as the election rhetoric ramps up, will it be effective for either side? Is this really the hill the 2019 election will be fought on? And if so, how brutal will the conflict be? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Welcome to The Biggest Stories of 2018. Every day this week, we will sit down with some of our favorite people to talk to them about the issues that dominated the year. Paul Wells is Maclean's senior writer based on Parliament Hill. He spoke to us a few months ago about the Conservative secret weapon, and he's back now to discuss how they've organized their efforts around it since. So, Paul, explain what Trudeau and the Liberals are facing heading into an election year.
Well, I decided to write about the opposition to the climate measures that the federal government's introducing because their side usually loses.
Right.
The side that wants effective measures, especially including a carbon tax, usually does not succeed at the federal level. I've been covering this issue for 20 years. I've been covering Chrétien government, the Martin government, the Harper government, when it was both more and less serious about making yards against greenhouse gas emissions, and they don't usually win. I mean, we just keep blowing past our targets again and again and again. So I thought I'd write an article that says essentially that's something that could happen, and why is it something that could happen? Federal opposition leader Andrew Scheer has a campaign manager, a guy named Hamish Marshall, who makes a specialty at campaigning against tax increases. And there's a rapid turnover of provincial premiers in election after election.
Yeah,
that mostly somebody who was an objective ally of Justin Trudeau gets voted out, and somebody who's an objective opponent of Justin Trudeau gets voted in. And that gang has become self-aware. It's like Judgment Day in the Terminator movies. They've realized that there's more of them than there is of him, and they're starting to work together, which is a new dynamic. So I thought that was something that was worth taking the measure of too.
Yeah, that was my next question, is how common is it for there to be a seemingly kind of coordinated coalition effort by premiers and a federal party on a single talking point?
I haven't seen it happen before. You could argue that the last time it kind of worked was during the free trade election of 1988, when the Quebec Liberal government of Robert Bourassa and the PQ opposition of the time worked together with Brian Mulroney to ensure that free trade passed, because free trade was very popular in Quebec. So that sort of cross-jurisdictional effort. And then you sometimes see it piecemeal. Look, if you belong to the New Democratic Party, then you are, as far as I can tell, willing to work for the victory of New Democrats anywhere in Canada at any level at any time. And there's these caravans of New Democrats who travel across the country campaigning in Manitoba and in Saskatchewan and in Newfoundland and wherever, you know.
Right, but you're also much less likely to unite that power across provinces and federal politics.
Well, no, exactly. And it's unusual that conservatives have as solid a hand as they have right now between the new premier in Ontario, the relatively new premier in Saskatchewan and in Manitoba, and Jason Kenney, who's likely to be the next premier of Alberta, Blaine Higgs, who after 2 months of nobody knowing what was going to happen in New Brunswick, Blaine Higgs has wound up as the premier, the conservative premier in New Brunswick. And so for really quite a disparate bunch of guys, they're all guys, but different in style, different in outlook, to be united on this issue and on what they don't want to see happen, and to have the disposition and the time to work on it together, that's something new in my experience.
When you started reporting on this, did you get any sense of how that actually came to be? Like, were there straight up conversations involved? What did the kind of organizing effort around it look like on the ground?
It starts with Jason Kenney, who is not the premier of anything yet. He's the new leader of the new newly united Conservative Party in Alberta, longtime Conservative activist, longtime federal cabinet minister, right-hand man to Stephen Harper. He sat down with Scott Moe, the generally quite nondescript premier of Saskatchewan, a week after Scott Moe became the premier, and said, hey, you know, there's something happening in Ontario, because at that point, Patrick Brown, the Ontario Conservative leader, had been kicked out of his party. And they thought that working together, they might be able to influence the outcome of the Conservative race in Ontario. So it was really late January, early February of this year, the stars aligned, and a veteran Conservative coalition builder like Jason Kenney saw that what he had already started doing in Alberta, which is uniting different Conservatives so they work together, was something that he could also work towards having happen across the country at the national level.
How kind of fractious can a group like that be? I mean, the obvious one that comes to mind is what role Doug Ford plays in that, because we sort of know a little bit about his political style. But if they're all united around this one issue, what else could provide kind of cracks in their unification?
Well, they're helped by the fact that this is not their full-time job, right? I mean, each of them is, you know, each of the ones who's a premier is the full-time premier of their province. And this is just enough, basically just enough coordination to bug Justin Trudeau until now. But they are very different in style. I mean, so we had this article in Maclean's with a kind of arresting cover image of the five gentlemen all posing. That photo was a construct. It was photoshopped from five different photographs. And Brian Pallister, the Conservative leader in the premier of Manitoba, was quite reluctant to have his photo taken. It took a fair bit of cajoling before he was willing to do it, because he didn't necessarily think that it was to his local advantage to be seen as a crony of Doug Ford and Andrew Scheer. But for reasons that his office really actually in the end never really explained to us, they came around and they decided to do it. These aren't the Rockettes, right?
Yeah.
They're not in tight formation. They're more like the Avengers. They get their own movies, they do their own thing, and then they get together every once in a while for some really big special effects.
What kind of explosions have we seen from it so far? Has this been effective in the back half of this year?
So far, it looks like it isn't. The polling that I've seen suggests that the federal plan to tax carbon emissions and then rebate the revenues through the income tax system so that most people don't actually end up as net losers out of the system. This is a very popular scheme. When it's explained to people, they're kind of into it. I think the last time Liberals lost badly at the national level on issues of carbon taxation was in 2008, a full decade ago. And I think people have had a decade's worth of headlines to get used to some of the arguments around these issues, and they may be a little bit more amenable to Liberal persuasion on this. But I'm not taking my story off the table. I think the proof will be in an election campaign. And we've seen example after example, in jurisdiction after jurisdiction, where sticking your head up and your neck out and campaigning for votes on these issues is really not a guaranteed way of winning. I think the dynamic is worth describing, regardless of how the story ends, but I'm also not at all sure that we know yet how the story is going to end.
Up next.
So Saskatchewanians are going to make a larger rebate than Ontarians are. I get that it has to do with how fuel intensive the local economy is, but that's going to be real hard to explain to the people who are getting less of a rebate.
There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details. The carbon tax is a really interesting issue to me because you would think it would split down the lines of, well, we have to do something about climate change. But I'm more interested in if it splits down party lines. Like, is this something that we're seeing conservatives line up against? Because I know some conservatives have run on platforms for carbon taxes.
We went through an interesting moment as a country where the conservative leader of the largest province, Patrick Brown, when he was leading the Ontario Conservatives, was going to accept the arguments for carbon taxation, was going to cooperate with federal efforts on the matter, and then use the revenues to pay for the rest of his platform. And every conservative that I knew in Ontario said, sure, like, fine, whatever. Well, you know, it's a little weird. We're not used to being pro-carbon tax, but he's the leader and off we go. And then when he was ejected from the party for very much different reasons, he was replaced by a leadership campaign where every single candidate rejected his vision of the carbon plan. And a lot of people who were willing to run, so, you know, Rod Phillips, the environment minister in Ontario, is an old acquaintance of mine. He was perfectly happy to run as a candidate for Patrick Brown. He was essentially recruited by Patrick Brown as a candidate to run on a platform that included carbon taxes. Now he's the environment minister of Ontario. He's taking the feds to court, and he is canceling cap and trade, carbon tax, every effective measure to reduce emissions.
How do you get him to do something like that?
There's a lot in politics that resembles sports more than it resembles philosophy. And if you're wearing the blue jersey, then you're going to do what the blue jersey says. And if that changes, then I found people to be remarkably agile. He's a conservative. This is what being a conservative means this year.
Yeah. Does that cost you later on? Like, is that something that's going to come back on him? It seems so blatant.
Yeah. I have to say that it's sure not guaranteed to cost you. I mean, every federal liberal in the country was against free trade in 1988, and then all for it by 1993.
Right.
When Anne McClellan was the Justice Minister of Canada, she stood up in the House of Commons and promised the Canadian people that extending same-sex benefits as part of the public sector employees' working conditions would not lead to gay marriage in Canada. She said, look, we're not this. Nobody's talking about gay marriage. And then 4 years later, they were talking about gay marriage, and Anne McClellan was fine with it, you know? Politics often doesn't involve sort of a stately and orderly evolution towards a higher level of justice and awareness. It often just involves swallowing yourself whole and hoping that nobody notices.
That's a good way to put it. As we get into the actual campaign, which starts in January, how important is it going to be for the Liberal Party to kind of articulate the message that you said is working for them on the carbon tax, but you kind of have to explain it. And I wonder if as the campaign starts and kind of slogans get shorter and punchier and simpler, if we have any idea if they're going to be able to do that.
I, for one, am very curious to see how this works out. Look, in some ways, the Liberal plan is simplicity itself. If you burn fuel, you will pay a tax that is assessed based on scientists' best guess about how much carbon you're putting into the air. And it's the same as a gasoline tax that we pay now. It's the same as all sorts of consumption taxes, taxes for smoking and so on. And then the extra little bit of it is the revenues that are raised in a province from that tax, 90% of them go back to people, to individuals through the income tax system. And because that includes revenues that are raised from business but don't go back to business, the revenues that are raised from business also go to individuals. Most people are going to get more in rebates than they paid out in carbon taxes mostly at the gas pump and on their fuel bills. And I think that's a pretty basically easy thing for people to understand. But there's a lot of weird kind of quirks to it. Like if you live in one province, your rebate is bigger than if you live in another. So Saskatchewanians are going to make a larger rebate than Ontarians are. I get that it has to do with how fuel intensive the local economy is, but that's going to be real hard to explain to the people who are getting less of a rebate. It's not even obvious to someone who lives in Gatineau, on the, you know, 10 miles from Parliament Hill, on the Quebec side, why they're not getting any rebate at all, but somebody who lives on the Ontario side is. And you could say, well, it's kind of obvious. It's because Quebec is cooperating with the carbon tax. Ontario is fighting against it so that the feds have to set up their own regime. But look, already I'm a couple blocks down the road.
That's what I was going to say.
Complex explanations of complexity that are, you know, not easy to use as a rebuttal to simple things like, why are they taxing us every time we get in our car? You know?
Yeah.
Why does Joe get a better rebate than Jane? This is not going to be an easy argument to win, it seems to me.
When we talked to you back in August or early September about Hamish Marshall, you told us kind of that you thought carbon tax was going to be the hill that this election would be fought on. Do you still think that?
Yeah, certainly one of the big ones. Both sides can imagine a situation where it's not in their interest to talk about this all the time. I'm struck by how few public comments Catherine McKenna, the environment minister, has made in detailed defense of this plan and of the philosophy behind it. She tweets a lot of feel-good stuff on Twitter, but she's not easy to get an interview with. And often in the interview, she doesn't say a lot. So the Liberals plainly think that they're likeliest to win on this if they don't tire people out by always talking their ear off about it. And similarly, I can imagine the Conservatives saying, you know, we can get these guys on general taxation, on general cost of living, on affordability, on not getting along with our American cousins. There's a million issues that they can go after the Liberals on that may be cleaner lines of attack. But I just think it's in these people. The liberals believe themselves to be the party of climate virtue. And the conservatives believe themselves to be the only people who understand the real nature of Canada as a resource producing center. And I don't think they'll be able to, I don't think mere tactics will be enough to keep them from resisting going at each other hammer and tong on this. I just think they can't resist a fight on this issue.
I've kind of heard that the election campaign itself is going to be nasty, but honestly, going at each other hammer and tongs over the merits of a carbon tax seems like a pretty civil disagreement. Do you have a sense, as we head into 2019, how nasty the campaign will be?
I think they're always pretty nasty. I mean, it's interesting. George H.W. Bush, the elder of the two Bush presidents, just passed away. And I read all of the eulogies that said he was such a gentleman and such a fine fellow.
Right.
I mean, I remember the 1988 presidential election, the one that he ended up winning when he succeeded from Ronald Reagan. And he ran against Michael Dukakis, who was an academic, who was a very inoffensive fellow. And that campaign got so nasty about prison furloughs for convicted rapists and now long forgotten issues since then, that Newsweek magazine had a cover illustration drawn by Gary Trudeau, who was the guy who did Doonesbury, showing Bush and Dukakis mud fighting, mud wrestling, you know, and with Bush's cartoon hands curled around Dukakis's throat. Campaigns are always way nastier than we think they'll be. It's become a bit of a cliche on Parliament Hill. Before every campaign, everyone says, well, this one's going to be very orderly and, you know, we can predict how this is going to happen. And then somebody in power starts to lose, or somebody who's got a shot at power starts to see it slip away from them. And this is their entire career. The stakes are so high that, I've never seen a boring campaign. Because I don't think the people in it can afford to have it be boring. And they're so convinced that the other side is wrong for the country that each side feels permitted to say just anything about the other side. And so there's no self-restraint. And I'm not sure this next campaign is going to be worse than any of those. But, you know, we always kid ourselves that they're going to be really straightforward. And then they always turn out to be just the damnedest thing you ever saw. That's one reason why I stay in this game.
Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
Paul Wells, senior writer for Maclean's based on Parliament Hill. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And you can visit thebigstorypodcast.ca if you want more big stories. You can also contact us there, suggest a story idea, or just tell us what we're doing wrong. You can also do that on social media, but not in public, please. DM us at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And we are everywhere you get your podcasts. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever. Please rate, please review, tell a friend. I'm Jordan Heath-Rollings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.